morning, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Totals Mathematics for All podcast. I'm Maria Zavala, and I'm hosting this episode. And this time, I feel like I need to begin with a massive apology. The guest for this, our second episode of season three, sat down with me over a month ago, and he's been the most patient and wonderful colleague to work with, mathematics professor John Oakes. Now, John and I know each other through Totals. In addition to being active as our webmaster, John has been instrumental in the recent writing of a position statement on LGBTQIA students in the math classroom. And he came to the show to talk about both the making of that statement, the significance of supporting LGBTQIA plus students in the math classroom, and also career, life, and what he does out there in Macomb County, Michigan. Here's that conversation.
Yes, I am John Oakes, and I teach math at Macomb Community College in Warren, Michigan. I teach at the South Campus, and I've been with my college for a little over 11 years now, so it seems like it's been a lot longer than I remember it to be. And I, in addition to my work at the college, I volunteer with Totals as the webmaster and website coordinator, and then the Korean Adoptive Family Network webmaster. And so that is a Korean adoptee organization that's also close to my heart and my what I feel is my purpose and calling in life. And then I'm also the two-year college vice chair of the Michigan section of the MAA. And I'm also active in AMATIC and Mishmatic. And so those are also math organizations for two-year colleges. And then if I weren't busy enough already, I recently was appointed to the City of Warren, Michigan Cultural Commission. And so I really have always wanted to be involved in government in some way. And so I felt like this was right up my alley to try to do what I can to give back to my community as part of the Cultural Commission. And so this all is very important to me because since I've been at my college so long, I feel like I'm not just an employee at the college. I'm a community member, just like my students who are taking my classes and all of the other students at my college who aren't taking my classes, or even the other employees or the other faculty members or the other even contractors who come to the college. And so I felt the need to, when I even bought my own home a couple of years ago, to make sure that I bought my home in the city that I'm working in. And so I now live in Warren, Michigan, and I teach in Warren, Michigan, and I'm part of the government in Warren, Michigan. And so I really feel like having a sense of community and a sense of belonging is important. And so if there's something that I can do to foster that so that it's even a stronger feeling for my students who come into my classroom, I really, above all, do everything for my students in that sense. But that's also why I'm a part of TOTOS, because I want to become a better teacher and work with other educators within TOTOS to try to learn more and to grow as an educator and as a person, and the same for all the other organizations I'm a part of.
Yeah. Awesome. And Warren, Michigan is where you make your home now. And this might be a nice segue to tell us a little bit about, have you always lived in Michigan? Can you tell us about what John was like growing up and how you got into math education?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So I was adopted from Seoul, South Korea when I was about 3 months old. And so as somebody who was adopted and I don't know my past, I do feel that like strong sense of, well, there's something in my past or in my my genes that I didn't just learn. And so then the whole nurture part of my life is that once I was adopted, I was adopted by a family in Genesee, Michigan. And so that's a small little village. And so, you know, I always tell my students that if you think back like early enough in time, there's probably a time that you remember a happy moment regarding math. And so even if you don't like math today, you probably liked math at one point, or there was a turning point where you know that one thing is what turned you off to the joy of mathematics. And so I remember being a kid, and in addition to having a good upbringing in a good school system, I also had my grandma at home. And so whenever I would go over to my grandma's house, she would try to do math with me. And so one of my favorite math memories is when my grandma was cutting up a banana, and then she started teaching me about fractions. And so that's one of my favorite memories of my grandma ever, is remembering that the first time anyone taught me about fractions was in my grandma's kitchen, and my grandma just was there cutting up a banana. And so I feel like there are a lot of factors that played into my love of mathematics and what brought me to the field of mathematics, but it wasn't just like genetics, or it wasn't just the education, or it wasn't just my parents and my grandparents. It was all of those factors combined. And so I think of this all the time when I think about my students who are in my classes. And I think, you know, like some of my students have gaps in their knowledge, but I don't know why they have a gap in their knowledge. And it's really like none of my business. And if they want to disclose something to me, they will, but I am going to give them an opportunity to just disclose things to me through a weekly self-assessment where I ask them, what did you learn this week? Or are there any things regarding anything that you want to tell me this week? And I do get a lot of responses from students who say, like, nobody's ever asked me before, like, why I didn't know this or why I never learned this. So I'm glad that you're asking me. And so not only do I like mathematics, I also have like a, I feel like an internal joy for learning and also helping people learn and seeing other people's like light bulb, I guess, go off when they finally get something that they weren't able to get ever before. And so the other inspiration for me to go into mathematics was the movie Stand and Deliver. And so that movie like came out when that movie came out and I was still like a wee little lad, I guess that's the term for it these days. And
yeah, so maybe we could pause it to say, for because we might have people who don't remember this movie, Stand and Deliver was the fictionalized story of Jaime Escalante, right, who was a teacher in the greater Los Angeles area, right?
Yes.
And has a famous story about like supporting students to take the AP test in calculus. And they were accused of cheating, right? Yeah. Stand and Deliver, it's a classic. You know, Julia Aguirre has done some really cool analyses of this movie, and Lonnie Horne has too, about it's an awesome and inspiring movie and also questioning this idea of like the hero teacher, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I love this movie. This is one of my favorite movies too.
Yes, I will say that like that movie brought my love of mathematics and my love of learning and everything together. And so I knew that when I decided I wanted to become a teacher, that I wasn't going to do something really big that might change the entire world. But for me, it was about reaching like one student at a time. And so I really think if everyone just tried to realize that it's not about them and your actions like every day and how you behave and what you do and what you say have an impact on others, if everyone just remembered that, then I think that the world would be a better place. And if I can do that just one student at a time by just instilling like certain values in my students, then that is enough to just like make my heart warm for from now until the end of time.
Right. Yeah. And that, I mean, this is a nice segue into talking about the statement in support of LGBTQ+ persons that Todos put out. Cause it is that kind of same idea of like, well, it's not always about just how you yourself identify, but mathematics educators are tapped now to just really know a lot about the multiplicity, the variety of student identities that are coming into our classroom. And so it's just kind of like, we need to engage in that kind of professional learning. You know, what does it mean to elevate the visibility of the LGBTQ+ community? Or what does it mean to create a classroom culture where students feel supported regardless of whether they've disclosed an identity to you, right? And especially also in light of the violence and the, you know, the mathematically calculable risk you take being perhaps if someone identifies as like a trans person of color, you know, your life is under threat in some places. So do you want to tell us a little bit, John, about this statement of support and your role in making it happen?
Yes. So for anyone who doesn't know, Todos put out a a statement in support of LGBTQ plus persons over the summer. And I was one of the primary writers for the statement, along with much input from the TOTOS board and other TOTOS members. And so the statement can be found by going to the TOTOS webpage and then looking for publications on the site menu at the top. And if you're on a computer, that's the green bar. Otherwise, you have to look for the three little setting buttons and then choose the other publications from the dropdown.
Yeah. And I'll also post a direct link for listeners who get our podcasts through Podomatic. They'll be able to see the direct link.
Yes. And so the things that I learned from being a part of the team working on the statement just surprised me so much. And with everything else going on in the world right now, I think that the anti-transgender legislation that is being pushed through state legislatures throughout the country at a record level this year is outrageous. And I think it's something that if more people knew about it, they would be outraged. But 2021 has been a record year for anti-transgender legislation. And also, if somebody didn't know, 2020 was the second record year, or the second highest year for anti-transgender legislation. And so I just was floored when I saw some of the legislation that is trying to be like introduced into states all over the country. And so the majority of these bills would affect transgender youth. And so there are bans on participation in sports, or bans on care, or curriculum ban, or ID restrictions. And so I know that this is a very sensitive issue for lots of people. And I even have friends who would say, well, I agree with some of these bills, but not with others. And some cases just aren't as cut and dry as others. But I would argue that these bills and these laws and policies, they affect not only the like physical health of our students and our teachers and anyone working in education and those in our community, but also their mental health. And so these are all things that go back to what I was saying. Like, there are things you can't just see by looking at a person. You don't know what's going on in their mind. You don't know what their thoughts are. And so I would hate for one of my students or one of my loved ones to be just in a situation where they couldn't do something because a law banned them from doing it, or they couldn't even get an ID because a law said that they couldn't get an ID with their name on it the way that they prefer their name to be. And so the TOTO statement includes information on all of this and resources that anyone can go and read and anyone can benefit from reading just to educate yourself more. And my real, I guess, plea in a way is, like, even if you are anti-LGBTQ plus today, like, still go and read the statement, look at the resources, educate yourself, because I'm not going to judge you for taking the time to educate yourself about important issues. And then if you still want to believe something different than I do, then that is your prerogative, and I will still continue to do the work that I do to support LGBTQ plus students, and I'll still continue to do the work that I do to support my students and my community and my loved ones. And so some of the things that are in the statement by Todos, I will say, are things where we wanted to make sure that it was a list of things that would be relevant to anyone, regardless of your identity and regardless of whether you are a part of the LGBTQ plus community or not. We wanted you to be able to be informed. And so being informed as, like, a person, as a mother, as a father, as a daughter, as a son, as a husband, as a wife, as a community member, as a teacher, as a bus driver, as a coach, as a principal, as a school nurse, or as a security guard, or whoever it might be, like, being informed is important. And so some of the resources I personally would like to point out are the resources from GLSEN. And so that's GLSEN. And so that is an organization whose main work is to end discrimination and harassment and bullying toward LGBTQ plus students, especially in K through 12 schools. But they have a goal specifically in at least part of their goal, at least, is for cultural inclusion and awareness. And so they have a very good inclusive curriculum resource on their website that's available, and it's also listed in the TOTO statement resource section. But I think that it's a resource that's good in terms of having ideas for administrators and families and staff and coaches and athletic directors, just everyone who might work with a student in the K-12 environment. They need to read this and know about this and make themselves more aware. And even if you're not in the K-12 environment, there's still things where you could read parts of that statement or that resource or the TOTOS resource and know something that you didn't know before. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that one of the ones that I was looking at from GLSEN is from their blog. One of the resources listed is How Do We Make Math Class More Inclusive of Trans and Non-Binary Identities by Kyle Whipple. And I found that one to be really informative too. He brought up the idea of, they brought up the idea of, you know, when you think about gathering data, and how typically we have gender binaries and in data collection as part of how people are asked to identify. And just that reminder that you should have more categories than two. And they suggest some categories for how people can offer to identify. And I know in our local school district here, San Francisco Unified, when I was going to do a survey with students, they double checked that with me. I had originally four categories just in case we put in another category, because, you know, this is the natural state of the world, right? It's like, you can say how you identify. And it's also like that nice reminder of what we often come across in like elementary school, maybe in high school too, but I'm more from the elementary world, of using gender as like a sorting mechanism for math problems, where they'll be like, there's 13 girls in the class and 14 boys in the class. How many kids are in the class? And, you know, and I remind students, like, we don't do that. We don't turn to our class and call them boys and girls. We call them people, we call them class, we call them things that are, you know, at least going to be inclusive. And then the other side of just like the erasure of the binary is the introduction of the fluidity, the plurality, right? So normalizing the use of they as a pronoun, and introducing the idea of, or introducing like biographies of like trans mathematicians and just kind of, and other non-binary folks, right?
Yes. And I think that that's all very, very important, because I'm teaching a statistics class this semester for the first time in 2 or 3 years. And so I have noticed how many of the examples I have in my own notes from things that just came from the textbook as an example, or things like that, that are not inclusive. And they say, well, 20 females and or 20 males or things like that. And so I've been trying to get those examples out of my notes, especially like over time. I know that if I go and I try to like just get rid of every reference to male or female in an example in my notes, that would be really, really hard to do, just because I probably wouldn't even catch every example by.
And we're also talking about the purpose. Like, yeah, I mean, you can still identify as a woman. So we're not saying like, you know, because sometimes there's this all or nothing thinking that can happen in schools, right? It's like, it's, we're not saying like, get rid of all the gender categories. We're talking about the expansion so students can see themselves in the kinds of things we're talking about.
Right.
And just how do we move away from the binary thinking, you know, towards.
And I absolutely agree with that too. And I have a different, like additional role in a sense as a statistics teacher in particular, that I sometimes will tell my students, well, this study only looked at people who identified as male or female, and that's okay because that's what that study wanted to look at as their groups. But it doesn't mean that they ignored the somebody who didn't identify as male or female. It just means that that wasn't one of the groups of people that they were studying in that particular survey, and that's okay too. And so it's okay for the purposes of that study to that they were clear on the fact that that is what happened. And so I actually do make sure that my students realize that when they are analyzing a study or looking at survey results, that they know exactly what the purpose of that study was and what the researchers were trying to study, because one of the resources in the TOTOS LGBTQ plus statement of support, it actually did not study anyone who identified as lesbian, but they explicitly stated that in the study. And so that is part of what I guess I'm
like, they're saying that they recognize that they missed this group.
Well, they actually just said in the study that I'm thinking of, just said at the beginning that we did not study anyone who identified as lesbian, but we would like to see if our findings extend to other groups beyond the groups that we studied, including lesbians. And so
they talked with a group of, let's say, gay men or something,
right?
And then they're basically saying, wait, we recognize that our study was not also inclusive of that group. Yeah, but I think that this is interesting because this is getting into, you know, scholars who argue for like the intersectional analyses. So when you focus on a particular group of people because they have unique experience, to be really clear about that, right? So like,
right,
think, yep, about like, you know, the scholarship around Black boys or Black girls in mathematics, and like there's a need for that scholarship, and also like a need to say like, well, who are we including in the study and why, you know?
Right.
I guess where the rubber, yeah, meets the, I wonder about, oh, sorry, John, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say that I think summarized exactly what I was trying to get at earlier, that with the examples I have in my classes, when I see, well, it's an example about males and females, I always make it clear to my students that, you know, this was the population that was studied as defined by the researcher. So if you, yeah, are going to do your own study, then if you look at this and say, well, that's not quite right, like I think that other groups should be included, in that like male and female is not the way to go about conducting the study, then that is great. You realized something from reading the other study that you realized didn't sit quite well, right, with you, and you wanted to make sure that the studies that you do or the surveys that you do are more inclusive of everyone.
Right. So, and that's, I mean, I think that's the really nice example also to that idea of the feeling of things not sitting right with you, like remembering that we have students who feel that way in our classrooms because we haven't done enough yet to really make it a space that is genuinely welcoming, inclusive, and representative of students who are part of the LGBTQ plus community, right? So that's a really nice rent, like thinking about that feeling and connecting it to the goal. Right? Like, why are we bringing these things up in math? Well, because when you know better, you do better. And we are learning more about what impacts students in the classroom and making spaces not just safe, but also it's kind of like the difference between like tolerance and like active engagement, right? Like, that's what we're talking about, is like the first step might be figuring out ways to make the classroom more welcoming. The second step might be, how do you actually engage with these issues and the representation of LGBTQ plus mathematicians and data scientists, et cetera.
Oh, yes. And I know that some of the things that I even suggest to my own colleagues is consider like sending a simple message before the semester starts to your students, asking them for their preferred pronouns, or and that's especially if maybe somebody is at an institution where they don't have that option to be set on their learning management system or in their email system. Like, just email the students and ask. And if somebody is at a college or an institution where it's not currently an option to have your preferred pronouns displayed, ask your administration to offer the option, because there is always something, even as small as that, that if it causes somebody to feel more comfortable, then it's worth it. And that's not something that is even a big change to make. And
asking, so important.
Yes.
And I think also what you're saying about asking them, like on a form or something, to just like that goes to you, that's just like, hey, this is for me to know you better. I even had a student gently correct me and say that she wanted to make sure I took out the word preferred on the form, because she was like, that's kind of like saying that maybe you'll call them that instead of saying like this is their pronoun. And so I felt that was really instructive when she told me to change that. And I also think about, you know, who feels safe disclosing their pronouns, and how we as teachers have to also respect that. You know, I feel like that's other territory to be aware of, you know, that a student might not, you know, they're going to tell you what to call them, you know, or what does it mean if they don't want to, you know, because I think of like, do we go around a circle and say our pronouns? What if somebody feels like they have to lie because this is not a place they want to disclose how they see themselves, you know?
And so like that, and I think that's exactly what I also was going to say, is that for those who are not part of the LGBTQ plus community, I think it's sometimes even harder to realize that being a part of the LGBTQ plus community isn't a choice. And so the person does not have any obligation to disclose anything to you unless they want to. And so somebody isn't going to disclose something to someone if they feel uncomfortable or if they feel unsafe. And so trying to create a positive and welcoming environment from the start is very, very important. And so I think that everyone would agree that first impressions mean quite a lot. And so this is a situation where first impressions could mean that you're going to get a totally different response from somebody like in a classroom, or somebody at your workplace, or your next door neighbor, or whoever it might be, or whatever situation you're in. Like, you might get a totally different response if you don't have a good first impression and have the impression that you're going to be welcoming and you're going to be somebody that the person can feel comfortable and safe disclosing information to and talking with, and just being somebody who cares and wants others to be a part of a community and feel included.
Yeah. Wow. Well, John, I think we're at a good place to kind of wrap it up. Do you have any final things you'd like to sign off with?
So I guess I will just say, I hope this is okay, but if people want to find me or talk with me, my website is www.johnoakes.com, and my Twitter handle and my Instagram handle and everything is there, and I would love to talk with anyone who wants to talk about just about anything. And if you have some resources to share or want to collaborate or just talk about what's in the TOTOS LGBTQ plus statement or about TOTOS or being Korean or about math or being part of city government, like if you want to talk to me, I probably have plenty I can say and am always willing to be a listening ear to anyone.
Well, thank you so much, John, for taking this time. So I'll go ahead. Special thanks to our guest, John Oakes. Thanks again for joining us on the TOTOS podcast. There are links to John Oakes' website, as well as links to the LGBTQ plus community position statement from TOTOS. Please check that out. And I want to extend a very special thank you to Tatiana Harrison for her help in editing this episode of the TOTOS Mathematics for All podcast. Until we see you next time, seguimos en la lucha. Adios.